I'd like to see us possibly discuss it, not from what can we do to simplify our life, but why do we do it? And is there a way for us to do it to make a difference in other people's lives, not just decreasing the stress in our own lives? A little background on my experience. Graduated from college in 97 and went into the Lutheran Volunteer Corps in Seattle for a year. And Lutheran Volunteer Corps is a program that focuses on simplicity, social justice, and intentional community. And I knew that I wanted to explore simplicity, but I also had college loans and other things that were strapping me. But LVC asked us to follow these tenets and to explore them in community. And we were given $85 a month to live on for spending money, and our housing and health insurance were taken care of. And then we were given $80 a month for food that we were supposed to share or put into the pool with my four other housemates. We had a house checking account. But last year was a real time for me to explore what it meant to live simply, but to choose to live simply, because I knew that I had support outside of myself, my family and friends. And now that I've left that experience and I'm here at Holden, here again I find myself supported by a community as I choose simplicity. But I had selfish intentions of in bringing up this topic because it's something that I'm wrestling with in my personal life, and I think that some of you are as well. And I'll just list some of the questions that I had today as I was thinking, and we can talk about them in any order. I asked, why do we seek simplicity? And how can we go beyond looking at how we live simply and begin to ask the question, how do we ensure that our actions improve the quality of life of those in our community who have less material wealth and less of a choice to live simply? And how can we create greater unity with the working poor, with those of us in the middle class? And what is it that divides us? And how do we make our own actions of simplicity extend beyond our own walls and power to empower our family and our friends and our neighbors to choose similar actions? And why do we try to live a life of simplicity? And is it okay for us to talk about voluntary simplicity from our position of power in our society, of privilege? And then where does tithing fit into simplicity? And some people might not like the word living simply or voluntary simplicity. Some people like to use sustainability or more simply. So use the language that is comfortable for you when you're talking about it tonight. And then one other question to throw in there, are we addicted to wealth, and where does that fit in with our wanting voluntary simplicity?
Living the simple life, the definition of it depends upon your vantage point from which you're viewing it. I don't know if we would all describe a simple life the same way.
We all describe involuntary simplicity the same way. We have a word for that, it's called poverty.
That's right. It's called poverty.
That's good. Involuntary.
Yeah. We don't describe that the same way either. That's true.
That's right.
I was working in a homeless shelter in DC, and one of the women in the shelter came in and had just bought some clothes. It was one of her first paychecks, and she was excited to buy brand new clothes. And I remember my first reaction being one of judgment, as I had clothes from a secondhand store that I was comfortable wearing, and she went out and bought all these brand new clothes. And I realized what a gift it is when you do have a check of your own to buy something, and the times that I go on vacation or different things, but to fulfill my own needs or wants. And here I was judging this woman, this homeless woman, because she was buying clothes. And I didn't like that I did that.
Tend to have the same point of view when you're in line at the grocery store behind somebody using food stamps.
Yeah.
To buy things that,
like steak,
you've decided were things beyond the level of simplicity you have chosen.
I like the simple lunch meal they have because it's connected directly to the giving. Mm-hmm. We save right now, we give right now what we saved. Mm-hmm. I really like that because I can get a grip on it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Somehow at home, if I have a simplicity meal, I never think to just write out a check to some charity.
But we could have had it simpler than we had it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We could have had a glass of water.
Yeah.
No, not simple.
No, that's really not a meal.
Well, yes, but we could eliminate that meal. Still survive.
Right.
But I want to know at breakfast time that I'm going to eliminate lunch.
Yeah, and it's hard to make the choice for everybody in the village to be quite that simple.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I understand that.
We can do that ourselves any day we want.
I'm sure we all have some similar reasons why we come to Holden when we're on staff or guest, but it's to seek renewal, seek something a little bit different than going to a theme park or to a hotel resort, that you hope to be enriched and learn some more and be challenged, see this beauty here. But at the same time, what a privilege it is for us to be able to come up to this place and to have this learning and to have community and to feel safe.
And to have a snack bar.
Yeah. And it seems like Holden and many other places like it need to be a place that we are able to really learn some things that we can take back out into the world. If we have this privilege, how are we going to use it? It's my belief.
But I find, Stacy, too, that this place can be as complicated, or we can get as busy too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I jumped right back into my tendencies to try to go to every class or mm-hmm. work extra shifts and mm-hmm. burned out and got a cold. So, mm-hmm. and then it hit me, wait a minute, this isn't what this place is about. So it's really not just removing ourselves from our old environment, putting ourselves in mm-hmm. one that's designed to be simple, but mm-hmm. it's really, it takes so much intentional effort to make that happen.
This is my first time here, and it's been fun during the day to just see how everything's kind of coming together and how you guys, how the community works. And what you just said, it reminded me of something I'd read in a book. The author was she was about living simplistically and frugally, and that she said most people have a conception that it's something that happens easily and they don't want to do it unless it's easy. And that it really takes effort and conscious effort to make this happen. And I've seen what you guys do to coordinate everything, coordinate people coming in every day and leaving. And yet you still strive for a balanced, simple community. And it just struck me that it's easy to think simple living. Okay, that's just eliminating some things and choosing some other things, when it really takes conscious effort. And for me, it's easy to say, okay, well, it's not easy, I don't have to do that today. But I think, not sure where I'm going with that, other than just that you guys have to really work hard, and community has to work hard to strive for a simple life. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of coordination for that. And I think in our own lives, it's a continual effort.
Some of the things that make our lives here more simple: being free of telephones, automobiles, television, that remoteness makes the operations side of this much more complex, much more difficult.
Oh, yes and no. I mean, if you had a phone, you'd have to have a bank of people answering it, because you'd have calls coming in like crazy, people changing reservations, and checking on things, and getting messages to somebody.
But
I mean, just the difficulty of if something breaks, you can't call a outside repair personnel, or pick up the phone and have it delivered this afternoon. It may take you 3 months to get that part for some piece of equipment here, and then it can be the wrong one. Because you can't take it down there and say, this is what I want.
Simplicity must be, living simply must be, there's various degrees of that.
Yeah.
You know, if you go down from 3 televisions, only 1, I mean, then you're really living simply, aren't you?
And I wouldn't say washing your clothes in the river like we saw on the slides from Honduras would be simple. Mm-hmm. A lot simpler to throw it in the machine and turn it on.
It seems like from what you just said that it's living conscientiously at every moment, looking at your options and saying, what's fruitful from this and what is degrading something in my life or someone else's.
I think I have to take it back. I don't think living in poverty is simple at all, especially in this country. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think the other day of all the kinds of things. Our son has purchased a piece of property, and he is going to build a house on it. Boy, is that a complicated thing to do. I mean, he's not, he doesn't have to go out and make the brick and put a thatched roof on. But it's very complicated just to think about all the things you have to do. And then when you get the house built, then you have that maintenance thing, you know. People who hire a cab and go to the grocery store and then come back home in the cab really simplify their life a lot. And it's also simplified by not all the things that they don't or can't do, like the participation in community things that they might otherwise do. Like, we like to simplify our life, and so he retires and he gets on, 7 boards within the first year and a half. And and that's very complicated, and it takes resources. And it takes time, it takes study, it takes a whole mess of things. But what you do is you're running your community is what you're doing.
To simplify, just to...
Takes money, exactly. Yeah.
To simplify just for the sake of simplifying is very good. What he's doing is probably better than... He's doing more good for more people by being there than he would if he tried to simplify by not being on those boards.
Right.
I should hope so. Yeah, I hope so too.
Our daughter purchased a share in an organic garden in the Puyallup Valley. And there's a whole lot of things that go on with that. As soon as you do that, you're saving the farmland. You're saving the people on the farm. You're eating well. And there's so much that she shares it with us too, because the 4 of them can't eat it all. Our son bought a fifth of what, gave her a fifth of the amount and paid that to her so he could take a fifth of what they bring home, and we all together can't eat it.
Does she have to garden it?
No, she goes down and gets it, and they have a big list, and she weighs it and picks up the stuff on her own, and they have it all there, sort of inside and outside of the shed. And there's like 40 people. This is a big farm. It's called Terry's Berries, and it's down on River Road in down by Puyallup. And everything is organic, and if you want to pay $40 more, then you can get flowers, and you do go get those. And there's rows and rows of them.
But that's not simplifying life, is it?
Well, she has to figure out when to go down there. She was out of town Friday. I was taking care of the kids, so I took the kids in the car, went down to the Terry's Berries, got lost, and we drove around anyway. But I found them, and I got all the stuff.
So overwhelming.
And it was a wonderful experience, but it took some time and effort.
Is this an annual fee?
They pay for it, and then they plant whatever they plant, and then you go down and get whatever it is that's growing well and is healthy and ready that week.
It's fun. It's a blast. But there are people who are growing their own. There are some gardens where there are people are, you know, they just have a small amount and in a big
neighborhood garden.
So do you do this weekly then?
Yeah, she goes down once a week and does it. Yeah. And the kids get to pet the kittens. And
their life is not simple at all.
No, it isn't. Both parents are working.
I was going to say, retirement simplified my life so much. And part of it because I don't have any money, very little income. So I have to figure out ways to do things with little money. And it's amazing when I just say, okay, what should I do today? And these things just come, and I can do them with very little money. It's been wonderful. Helping my parents for one thing when they're ill, today too. And little things, not just family, other people. It doesn't take money.
We've heard some tangible examples of ways that people have simplified their life and it also benefits others, whether we talked about the hunger awareness meal, or you retiring and serving others through being on a board, or the supporting the organic farmers and the land. And are there other ways that people have found in their life where they've been able to bridge that gap of simplifying their own life and helping others at the same time?
Stacy, I wasn't here for the introduction, but did you mention what the winter community does here every week with that place where the money goes?
Oh, the hunger awareness, yes, we have. Yes, yes.
And whenever, now whenever Stacy leaves, after 2 years, she'll have been here, maybe more, I don't know, but whenever someone that's been here, a year at least, they have a giveaway. And it's a party, sort of, and it's a lot of fun, but they treat it like they're going to a party. And anyone, whatever you've accumulated that you don't want to put in your suitcase and take home, you give to whoever wants it. and wonderful things there. And then if you know where the potty patrol is, on the door there's a sign, from rags to riches. And people leave very nice clothing there. I got this shirt here. And one day I was wearing a plaid top and Stacy said, oh, I got the pants to match that. But shoes, boots, jackets, winter coats, everything is there. And it's all shared by the community. Anyone can have it.
Well, you know, the potlatch is an old Northwest Indian tradition where they would, since you throw a big party and see how much stuff they could give away to the rest of the tribe. Well, that was more to show how powerful you were.
And they often serve refreshments and make a party out of it.
Do they still do the happy exchange up here? We were here for one winter years ago, and we did something called Happy Exchange.
Yes, we do that in the winter. We did that this winter. Maybe it's idyllic in some ways at Holden at times, but we can't, because we're a village and nonprofit, someone can't charge another villager for haircuts. It would be called a, not a village, but a cottage industry, and that would be illegal.
Do a donation?
No.
And business license.
And so there's a couple people in the village that do haircuts, and so people barter. And but we've had nights of people saying, if you do this for me, I'll do this. And exchanging our services, not just material wealth, exchanging our time.
Which cost you a dish team.
Yeah, it cost you a dish team or a back rub. Oh, it's wonderful.
And I think that if you have a strong sense of community, maybe it's in your neighborhood or maybe it's with your family, I mean, you picked up your daughter's vegetables and all that, but I think there's creative ways of helping one another simplify each other's lives.
one of the things that impresses me about this place is your emphasis on conservation of food. Mm-hmm. Don't want to waste anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly foreign to me.
Gee, we can hardly stand at French toast at coffee hour. Gee, that's tough to take.
It really was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's abundant at the same time as that there's little waste.
But you're not wasting things. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Something happened in my neighborhood just before I left that I thought was wonderful. A man at the street, a retired fireman, I think he is, arranged right in our little area, and we don't even hardly know each other, went down to the city and got a permit, and they waived it because it was for a charity. And he went all around the neighborhood to get us all to sign that we wouldn't get mad if they had a little music, and it was to collect clothes, money, whatever anybody wanted to bring, and a street dance right in the corner, right in the street. And he had a mic set up for music, and it turned out to be really a fun thing, and here was everybody out there line dancing, and then piles of clothes and things just came on the corner. It was really fun.
So what happened to the clothes? Where did they go?
He took them for a thing that he had planned. I mean, it was for a community thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a clothing closet, they call it, the clothing closet. And people in the church, and people go to garage sales and pick up bags of clothes and stuff, and they bring them to the church, and there's some people sort them for a couple hours on Tuesday, and on Wednesday for 2 hours we give them away, and the average number of people that come to get those clothes is 75 in 2 hours flat. We're in downtown Tacoma.
No questions asked.
No. Now grandmas come in and they just sweep the children's clothes off the table and take them in bags and leave. And we just stand there and go, whoa, you know, they can't have that many kids and they can't be that many sizes. And then a couple weeks later, half that stuff will come back. They try them on their grandkids, they don't fit, they send it back. It's just, they got all
probably had the ones that the smallest grandchild just grew out of.
Yeah. That's,
is it downtown Tacoma?
Yeah.
It's on
Christ Episcopal.
Yeah. It's that big concrete place.
310 North K.
Yeah, and there's another one that I know about that where they just give away the clothes like that for a couple of hours on a Saturday morning, way out in the southern part of the county, one of the churches. And so there's something nice about that. They get wonderful clothes there, and what we do when we ask people to give us clothes is to we say, some of these clothes will go to people who need jobs. And so we need clothes that they can go to work in.
Or go to an interview and
even more. Yeah. So we get some really nice things. And I know when they take them out of there, they're going to wash those cashmere sweaters and they're going to be that big when they get done, you know. But maybe they can wear them that one time when it's really important. So, it takes work and it takes time. We had a deacon lady that was there.
I was in a small apartment building with comparatively, I guess, 30 people. And it's called, quote, affordable. And but we have a laundry room. There's nothing, no community room built in, which would be wonderful. But there, so we do have a laundry room, and we have someone donated a long table, and we all put out things that are discarded. Or when someone moves, they leave a lot of things, and it's become a wonderful just. little exchange without ever verbalizing it within our own building. And then what also happened, we were next door to a porno shop or something, and that they discarded a bunch of old bookcases. So we got this great big bookcase a manager that put in our laundry room. And I stopped off at Barnes & Noble just a fluke and asked if they had any discarded new books, could we have them? About 6 months later, they called us. So now we have this bookcase full of new books. It's quite a random, but it gives a, even though it's not verbalized, it gives a whole different feeling to the place. Mm-hmm. We, you know, you look at books instead of whatever, you know,
yeah,
when you're there, or it gives a little dignity to the place. A lot of people are disabled, social security or whatever. and one person kept saying, but who's in charge? What about, I said, we are. He said, yeah, but who's the head of this? I said, we are. And he couldn't get it. It's our library.
That's great.
But it's small, but it's, I feel very significant for creating a better environment.
Yeah, it sounds like community is happening in an apartment building. That's good.
Subtly.
Watch out, your bookcase will be overflowing in next year.
It is, more have come back than it right now. It's a phenomenon. At first they all went away, and I thought, oh dear, and then they all came back.
That's great.
The other thing in Seattle that's happened, that's made a difference directly, even with myself, but I've seen it directly with other people, there's this program sponsored by Chihuly, it's Art for Seniors. Is anyone familiar with it?
No.
What pleases me is that it's quality. The instructors are just tops, as good as you can get at the university. And it's free for seniors, it's sponsored by corporations. And I've witnessed friends just make a change in their life, just having this. I've seen people lose weight and fix their hair, you know, after getting into art and really producing something they never thought they could do. Some are printmaking, they had writing at the public market in Bellevue, they had paper sculpture. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful program, and it's for anyone.
Oh,
senior,
wow.
Art for seniors. And it's by word of mouth.
Oh, wow, that's
great.
Mm-hmm. So you can go basket weaving there.
It sounds like we're saying in some ways that simplicity, or trying to live a life of voluntary simplicity that isn't stressful because you're spending time simplifying, needs to be done with some sort of community or needs. You can't, in order for it to be fully enjoyable and work or continue, it depends on more than just yourself.
I think we've lost it because of the breakdown of community. Mm-hmm. Which interferes with community and is trying to reestablish community in a sense.
I think there has to be some tangible benefit before people are willing to simplify to somebody, either to themselves or to others. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to see that sometimes.
It's hard to see it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's always tangible benefit or sometimes it's fear of choosing simplicity and then having something happen that you fall into involuntary simplicity
right.
Or poverty. And that's where it gets really difficult. If you try to choose simplicity and you don't have any money to live off of.
No parents to
you know,
baby out.
That's a big fear a lot of times, I think.
Yeah.
I have to say something here about that. I've had so much fear about money in my life. Mm-hmm. And finally, when I put it all, and I mean seriously in God's hand, it's been taken care of in tiny little ways that just come sometimes at the very last minute. I remember one day saying, okay, what am I gonna do today? It's due tomorrow. And somehow it came, my daughter called and she helped out once and one time it was another one of my sons and my sister and other people and
yeah,
and then sometimes I didn't really need to pay something anyway, I didn't need it. You know, it happens and it's faith and it's really scary.
Yeah, we were making our reservations, and I said, gee, Virginia wanted to come up here sometime, she said. Why don't we just put her name on the list? Yeah. So we put her name on the list, and went home and said, we put your name on the list, and we paid for your way up there. We're going on Friday.
That's not a month or so. 4 months.
4 months. Well, anyway, whatever.
That's great.
So, but it's fun. It's fun to do it, too. If you've got the money to do it, then it's fun to do it. Find ways to.
But if you really, really, really listen, it takes a lot of quiet listening, I discovered. This is a noisy place we live everywhere. Even here, it's noisy. Mm-hmm. You really got to listen. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how the answers come. They just come somewhere.
I'm amazed in my life at how little I do see as options that are simpler or would be more freeing or cheaper or better for others. And last year when I was living in Seattle doing Leaf and Volunteer Corps, I found that I never looked at the paper to see all the free things that occur, that the symphony offers a concert, or if you bring canned goods, once every season they do that, and you can go to this wonderful concert, and not just entertainment-wise, but food-wise, and transportation, or finding creative ways to spend my time. And I definitely wanted to be skiing, and I wanted to be driving somewhere, and I wanted to buy some new music, things like that. But all of a sudden, checking out the library a little bit more than I had before, and realizing that they had music there that I never realized they did. And I still wanted to buy those things, but all of a sudden, those things became more evident. I didn't realize that they existed. But once you start looking for ways to simplify your life, then there's many, many things that open up. And then in the Seattle Weekly, there's a listing of movies, and there'll be almost every week a showing, a preview of some movie. The first 500 people get a free ticket or something if you stop at Barnes & Noble. And sometimes you have to go out of your way to go get that ticket, but it's there's something always there. And it was exciting living in a house with five other people who they saw different things in different places, so they worked and they come back and tell us. But I was amazed that I didn't know all that could exist in a city.
But isn't there a difference between living with less money and living simply? Not the same thing.
At times.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Sometimes living with less money, you know, not very simple.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Pretty complicated.
Not when they turn off the water. When you have to have a certain amount of money to live.
Yeah.
You do.
You do.
I think one thing that you just said is reminded me is I started doing the same thing, just mm-hmm. trying to find creative ways to kind of get my needs met or those entertainment. What it did for me was open up a whole new world of freedom mm-hmm. in that I didn't have to pay $7 to see a movie. I could go for a walk in my own neighborhood and be much more entertained. Okay. Or I would not be basically. And then you're wasting time
behind you.
It just opened up a whole new world of finding creative ways to live life mm-hmm. and just being more in tune with the world around, you know, whether, I don't know, just whatever mm-hmm. strikes the individual is for that. But for me, it was just it was truly the simple pleasures of being present in the moment mm-hmm. and just being not looking for outside mm-hmm. things to fulfill me, which weren't happening, but just really being present with the moment and the person I was with or being alone. For movies and dinners out and things like that were a waste of time, just were so unfulfilling anymore. And I think also what you just said about, you know, is having less money and living simply. I mean, I think some things are, you know, cost more money to, you know, drive to the store than ride my bike. I mean, you know, that might be easier, but for me, it's the process. Sometimes it's the process of taking longer to do something. Riding my bike to the grocery store is just so much more fulfilling all the way around. And if it's raining, that may not be easier, but it's more of a challenge. And those little things just open up new worlds. So for me, it's been the little things, looking for the day-to-day things. If I have to do a task, how can I do that task creatively and give it time and not rush through it?
Right. You don't have to raise your hands, but think for a moment how many of you have a wallet on your person right now that you're carrying. Maybe some of you went to snack bar. That's fine. Don't feel guilty about that at all. But when I first arrived here in November, I was amazed how different I felt when I didn't have to reach for keys or I didn't have to reach for money. Uh-huh. And then I was amazed when I'd go out of the village and I'd go to the ATM machine, get some money out of the bank, and I have it in my pocket and I knew it was there. So all of a sudden I used my time looking for things to buy, even though I didn't even have a list of things I needed, because I knew it was my pocket. And I'm amazed in the days that I don't put money in my pocket. You know, maybe I have my license and a credit card or something, but when I don't have that cash there, it's very freeing if I don't have a necessity to buy. It's almost painful when it is there, because I my attention is always going to the store or...
That's great. Not on the quiet.
Yeah.
I remember I used to go to Target and think, there has to be something in here I need.
Right.
Yeah. There's got to be some little thing, and it was almost a subconscious goal of not leaving Target without something.
Right.
And one day I reversed this, and I said, how long can I go without going to a store? Yeah. You know, and I would only go to the grocery store when I had to go. It took a little bit of work process. But it turned it around. Yeah. And now that is the challenge. You know, it's like, I've struck out if I have to go to Target now or something. But it's kind of like my own personal challenge of how long can I go without going to the store or spending money.
I do that too. I mean, with a former housemate one time, she said to me, how come you always seem to have money for things and I'm always running out? You know, and it wasn't that she didn't have a decent enough job or anything. And I said, well, you know, it's just that, you know, I'd rather spend my money on other things, but I said, you know, sometimes when I'm looking at these silly flyers that come in the Sunday paper, I catch myself thinking, why am I even bothering looking at this? I don't need any of this. And, you know, even if I look at something and as I'm looking at the sale paper and I'm, oh yeah, I could use that, or oh yeah, I could use that, I consciously put it aside and say, no, I don't need that. And I consciously don't go to the store. And she's like, oh, wow. So she tried it for like a month, and then it just got to be too much for her.
I like what you said, Stacy, though, about... if you don't have money in your pocket, you don't have to fight the urge to buy.
Right. Yeah, right.
But if you have money in your pocket, ooh.
Great way to put it.
You know, one of the things, you mentioned the keys, and that just struck me because my first couple days here, I was like, oh, I'm going to the room, I need to get the key. You know? I live in a part of Minneapolis, or at least it's not as bad where I live now as where I lived before, but I lived before in a part where you had to make sure that the doors were always locked and that the windows, at least, especially on the first floor, were closed. And it'd be wise to close them on upper floors also. And, you know, now I live in an apartment building and neighbors in my apartment building try not to know each other. You know, and so it's, my whole life is governed by all of these different keys for things. And it's been very freeing being here without the keys. But then the challenge is, you know, how do I go home and simplify some of those things?
You might want to sell like your doors at home.
Yeah, I know.
That's one thing you learn here, you can't bring home with you.
Yeah, well, there's a number of things here that I can't bring home with me, unfortunately.
I think I'll go home and try and think and be aware of what I spend and why I spend it. And I also think we'll take the scraper at the table and see what the food that we throw away and take a good look at it before it goes down the disposal.
Yeah. I don't know if any of you know John Schramm, who was a former director here at Holden, him and his wife Mary, very dynamic people who visionaries who started the community of St. Martin in Minneapolis. And Mary had a vision of creating a community, an intentional community that worshiped together, but also they opened a restaurant and a bookstore where all wait staff are volunteers, members of the community, people, college students coming in, people from churches. And there's just, I think, a handful of people that are paid staff. You know, the head kitchen manager, the bookstore manager, a bookkeeper, I think. But all their tips and wages go to a different cause. I think each month they switch, and it's pretty neat to see. Not only are they working on a cause, but they're working in community, and they're raising their children together. They're making choices together, and now they have a whole block if not more, where people have bought houses on the same block as they want that community with each other. And they have one real estate agent that is, helps them find houses in that area. And I think it's really neat to see how community can continue to blossom and flourish and help in that freeing sense from...
That be open when we go out tomorrow? Vote? The late vote?
Oh, in Minneapolis?
Oh, I thought you were talking about...
Oh, they live, and then they have a store. John and Mary Schramm live in Leavenworth,
okay,
Washington.
Okay, but you were talking about Minneapolis.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Right. And they started a store in, I think it's called Jubilee, in Leavenworth, and yeah, have a lot of things from around the world, primarily South America, where they try to get fair prices for the people that are making the goods. But...
So what are you thinking? You're trying to decide what kind of books to buy tomorrow when we go to the store?
I thought they had a restaurant.
Yeah, we could always eat. Yeah, that's true.
But, sorry, I didn't...
No, that's okay.
Does that mean then that they serve simple, good food that's inexpensive also?
No, they have organic, I think they have organic vegetables. It's, I think, almost all vegetarian.
It is all vegetarian.
All vegetarian, yeah.
Okay. One of the frustrations in Seattle, I think, even low income, like to eat out, the cheapest is McDonald's, which is intolerable.
Yeah.
And oil and smell. And then you have the, expensive. And I think there is one restaurant coming up in Pioneer Square. But generally, there's nothing that's just like a bowl of soup, but like here and a good piece of bread, which it seems to be those two extremes.
One other thing that John was and Mary were here earlier this summer on teaching staff, and John led a session on simplicity, and he was talking about when they were living in D.C. and just some real tangible things that I think sometimes they're more accessible when you're living in a city versus in a rural area. But at that point in Washington, D.C., it was very hard to get a parking permit on any street. And most of you, I'm assuming, have been there or seen the row houses. And so they're really packed in there. And there's a lot of people living in those houses. And so just very little parking. And so friends in their neighborhood who were in community together really looked at how rarely they used a car and how little they used it, and realized that they could get one parking permit and get a car together because they were taking the metro to work, they were walking places, and that was easy to do in D.C. because of the public transportation.
I think they're actually, because I mentioned it, and then someone said they're actually doing it in Seattle. I don't know if it's just the city where they have cars. Is anyone?
I read an article about it.
Where they're sharing cars. It's good to spread the word.
Well, Portland, Oregon used to leave bicycles all over downtown.
Yeah, they used to. Chartreuse bicycles. Wherever you needed one, you'd get on it and take yourself to there and leave it. Uh-huh. And then somebody would see it and, I got to go here. And they would. And
where is this?
In Portland. They did it for quite a while, about 3 years, I think. And then it came unglued because of lack of maintenance and lack of people. The city should have picked up on it and just kept on doing it as part of their transportation, but nobody took ownership.
I thought that was incredible.
I think some of the bicycles just vanished, too.
Yeah
I'm sure they do.
Boulder has a program like that, too. Same problems. Boulder?
Yeah.
Boulder.
Yeah, there has to be some way where they can kind of keep track of them.
Yeah.
I asked our police department, which is moved into the Denny Triangle downtown in Seattle, if they would do it. They were almost offended, but I kept saying it anyway. But I think it's good to keep reminding these groups to do this. I mean, they wanted to be... They had a public relations person and wanted to generate this really nice persona with the neighborhood. And I told them the best way maybe to, with bicycles, to integrate themselves. And they said they don't have the money or time, which may be true. But I still think part of it is just planning ideas and keep, till they sell more, till they feel that it is something maybe they could.
When you were talking about John and Mary in D.C., there was a story that they used to always tell about one of their neighbors. They were a couple, and they had some children, And of course, the kids always wore the key around the neck to their apartment and this and that, and they have lots of beautiful things. And a pair of pianos, both of them were pianists in some big orchestra. And
grand piano.
They were grand pianos in this apartment. And one day they came home and everything in their apartment was gone except the pianos. They just walked off down to the Goodwill. They furnished their whole apartment with stuff from the Goodwill, and they never locked their door again. What's the use?
Wow.
But I think about that.
I think it was the Schramms that said that when they were in Washington, D.C., their children's bicycles were always getting stolen, so they finally solved the problem. Bicycles with no seats, and then they never got stolen.
Yeah, they didn't have to lock them.
No,
they didn't
have a seat. They just ride them standing up, which they usually did anyway because they're in a hurry.
Well, we've been here for about 45 minutes, and it's getting late. If people have more ideas or comments, we can continue. This isn't a discussion that can be solved or figured out in one evening, and as we've clearly shown, there's a difference between living with less money and simplicity, or voluntary simplicity sometimes. But it seems like there's been some good ideas and we've learned some things here.
There's just something to think about.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if anybody has any suggestions on, I mean, one of the things that I struggle with is when I do get something, how do I know where it was made and under what types of conditions and so on?
Yeah.
You know, because I think that that's really important to how we live. But I struggle so hard because, you know, how do you find those things out? Mm-hmm. If you look in something and it says made in Bangladesh, does that automatically mean it was made under poor conditions? And, you know, sometimes it says made in USA, but then it really wasn't. And, you know, it's just a hard... That's something
maybe
I really
Solomon Islands under just as bad conditions.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, if you decide not to buy something made in Bangladesh, are you doing more harm than good?
You know, well, see, and I struggle with that because I lived in Central America and I know the types of conditions, but the problem there was that our country helped to impose economic policy so that we undermined all local businesses,
right.
And then left Nicaragua sit for about 7 years, you know, 5 to 7 years festering after we had undermined all of their local businesses. And then we came in with these free zones, the piecemeal stuff, the sweatshop type places. We said, oh, look, we're bringing 12,000 jobs with this company. Oh, look. Then the proponents say, look, we're doing so much good. We're bringing these wonderful things. Look how good people we are. You know, all you people talk about low wages, but these people didn't have jobs. Well, they did 5 years ago before we undermined, by our economic policy, their things. You know, I just struggle with that.
I think the problem's encapsulated by the fact that if I wanted the answer to that question, someone like you would be the person I would ask.
But I just feel like so often I just don't have all the answers, you know? And I,
we were in Europe looking at all the stuff for sale there, and I was just struck by the fact that not everything in Europe is made in China. I thought it was, because if you shop here, that's what you're going to find. I went into Penny's one day asking for U.S.-made clothes. She said, oh, we get some of those sometimes. I mean, and the clothes in Penny's are made everywhere.
Yeah.
In every poor country on the earth. Yeah.
Isn't that what this global economy is all about?
2 million.
Well, that's what they say.
Well, that's outsourcing our jobs is what all that is, and I don't know what to do about it.
Expanding.
I've started asking the sales personnel, do you know where this was made and under what sorts of conditions? And they just look at me like, what do you mean under what sorts of conditions? And I said, well, was it made under sweatshop conditions? Or, you know, what do we know about the wages of the people who made this?
Please,
and they look at me like, oh, I'm sure, this is good quality. I'm sure this was made under good conditions. And I'm like, well, but how do I know? You know, you don't seem to know much about it. And then they'll say, oh, but you know, we've never heard that this brand is ever a problem. I said, yeah, but you know, this and this and this and this and this brand all are. Really? JCPenney's and Sears and, and Dayton's and all of these all, you know, are selling things that are made under bad conditions and, you know, really? You know, it doesn't help. I still don't know under what conditions something was made, but
isn't there a list of staff up there on the board right up here? On the,
there is a list.
There's a list.
In the dining room.
Of food. It's on food, just food alone.
But it also lists some companies with all other kinds of products.
Yeah, if we try to boycott those companies, we will get crazy as a loon.
Yeah.
And Nestle, sneaky Nestle, they are still promoting formula after all these years. And we boycotted them so thoroughly before that they said they'd change their policy and they're still trying to get women to use formula.
But maybe on foreign markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a woman in Nicaragua who came up to me in church one day and she said, can I have 20 Cordovas for milk for my child? And this was a child that was not very old. And I said, you know, your breast milk would be so much better for this child. Why aren't you breastfeeding her? And she just got irate with me. You're a North American. Of course you fed your children with, I don't have children. That was beside the point. She didn't believe me. You know, you fed your children with this formula, and I need to buy this formula for my children. And, you know, you're from the United States, and of course that's what you use, and we see it on TV. And I said, no, really, you know, it's your breast milk. So we spent quite a while talking, and she never believed me. But what ended up happening was they began to work with the pastor and his wife to work with the woman, and they helped her set up a little business, and she got somebody to help her massage and be able to begin to breastfeed again.
Oh, wow.
But she was completely convinced that formula was so much better than
that's what we had advertised there.
Yeah. Well, and there's great big billboards, you know, and the company, the Nestle company, was right next to Axio Medica Cristiana, which was one of these health organizations that I was working for.
Yeah.
You know where the McDonald's that has the largest sales of any McDonald's in the world is? It's in Beijing, just by Tiananmen Square. And for the average Chinese, it costs a week's wages to go in there for lunch. And as the professor said, it doesn't taste any better there than it does here.
And not as healthy as it.
Right, tastes the same. And yet then more, it was McDonald's, though, that took the moral stand to not put a McDonald's in the West Bank Israeli Jewish settlements when they wanted it. And Burger King said, oh, but we will.
Yeah.
Right.
It's such a challenge, you know, right. When and where and what and...
Well, and you know, the business of not being able to drink any water in China, you don't drink water in China unless it's been boiled and kept hot for X amount of time. And even then, you worry a little. But man, you can buy Pepsi and Coke and all that pop. And when we were there the first time, we got pop in bottles that came in those plastic cases, you know, and there was orange and lemon, lime, and remember all the standard ones we used to have 40 years ago, and recyclable bottles. Mm-hmm. And now you can buy Coke in cans and in bottles, and Japan's even worse. We were in Japan for a week, and I don't think we were out of sight of a pop machine the whole time we were there. There's one every half block right on the street. You can walk 10 feet between machines. That must be all they drink is pop what was that one called?
Hot
Sweat.
Hot coffee in a can.
I loved it. There's one called Sweat.
Macari Sweat. It's the Gatorade.
God. This doesn't relate to food, but I have a friend who got a little part-time job she needed in the Westlake Mall in the downstairs where they have these wind-up toys, you know, and all whir. And she said, yeah, but she said a lot of the batteries go dead and blah, blah. I thought, well, why don't they have them solar energy? You know, I know why they don't, because you have to buy the batteries. But when you think of it, they have those solar energy calculators and and they wouldn't have to replace them all the time. I mean, wouldn't it make sense? I mean, and this battery thing, you know, where they have to throw them out and buy new ones, and or they don't come with them or something. But I mean, wouldn't that be a major thing to do solar energy with toys?
Don't battery companies run the toy world? I thought they did.
They probably do. But
give the toys away and sell them.
Yeah, they practically give the toys away and the batteries are expensive.
But wouldn't it would make so much sense to have the solar energy? I'm sure they could, don't you?
Wind up, remember?
Like they have the wind-up solar
the most expensive toys right now are the wind-up ones with a key.
That's what they sell, the whole store. But they also have now, starting in Africa, these radios that Fred got. You wind it up and it just goes forever.
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
They were just coming.
They used them in Africa.
The year 2000 when everything stops.
Yeah. Well, that would be the same.
The radio station.
It's the same thing on the little toys.
Well, they have wind-up razors too, but I haven't felt the need for one. That's one way I simplified my life when I was up here in the winter, needed all the insulation I could get.
Yes.
He just kept it. His wife didn't object. He's lucky.
Well, thank you very much for taking part in this conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for organizing for us.
I was nervous.